Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, there's much talk from the government about tightening up the rules for asylum seekers coming into Ireland, a response in part to the same thing happening in the UK. But even under the current rules, deportations regularly take place. But it's quite a complicated business. The security correspondent for the Irish Examiner, Cormac O'Keefe, was given access to witness the deportation system in action. Cormac, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
The first thing that's really striking about the deportation process is the amount of manpower it involves.
It is extraordinary. It is absolutely extraordinary. It was one of the things just struck me from the get-go, from going into the first briefing back in September. And you, at the end of that briefing, which was a couple of hours long, it was just struck the amount of administrative work that has to be done. And it's so extensive that it takes a number of meetings to go through them. I mean, they have to deal with so many different agencies. There's so many different hoops to jump through. So many procedures they have to follow. Different embassies have different requirements for allowing people to return home, just for as an example. And the amount of Gardaí that are involved in these operations are, you know, they exceed any other Garda operation that I've come across before. I mean, you would have to have a nationwide Garda operation that would even begin to match the amount of resources that go into this.
Yeah. Now, once there's a list of people that are to be deported, is that set in stone or can that change?
It did change in this particular case. Once a deportation is signed, the Gardaí have to, they're obliged to enforce it. Obviously, there's always discretion and circumstances arise where that changes. In this case, they originally had a target list, as they described it, of about 87, as far as I remember. As it turned out, there was 52 on the actual deportation, but that's not unusual. Actually, they expected it to probably be around 30 to 40. But they managed to get 52.
Okay. And that other 30-odd people, why weren't they on the plane?
Some of them just couldn't be found.
Mm.
Just in relation to the families, they originally had 5 families on the target, on their list. In one of the cases, the father died while in Ireland, so that changed the dynamic, and I think they lodged a subsequent appeal on the basis of that. So appeals can be lodged with the courts basically up until a number of hours before the flight takes off. So it's constantly a live process. Like at the meetings as well, they always ask the detective superintendent would ask, you know, is the person good to go? Are through all the legal impediments, because that changes, because people can make appeals to a very late stage. So it's constantly in a state of flux.
Yeah. So when they have a list, and however much that list changes, presumably these people are scattered throughout the country.
Yeah.
Is there then a big process of collecting them or tracking them down and then bringing them to a central location?
Yeah. Some of them, many of them will be staying in IPAS centres. So they would have an address for them. Others, they have to try and track down because they may not be at the address where they last had an address for them, and that was the case. They had an arrest operation in September, I think, or October, and there were 90 Gardaí involved in that operation. 66 in Dublin, 30 around the country. And in one case, there were 6 Georgians staying in a caravan in a halting site, which I found extraordinary, you know. So the scenarios vary as to where they are staying, and there is a very lengthy process to try and identify where they're living, and then there's a lengthy process to engage with them. Particularly in relation to families, at the various briefings I was at, there were lengthy discussions about trying to engage with, it would be the mother in the vast majority of cases, trying to engage with them and seeing, are they willing to return? Should they expect any resistance when you do try? And comfort deportation. So there's a lot of engagement with the families. This is what came up through the various meetings.
Yeah, so every family and every individual has to have at least one guard with them. Would that be the case?
Oh, yeah. Usually, apart from the children, generally speaking, it would be a minimum of two for each adult. Now, in one of the families, there was a boy who was just about to turn 18, so there was some discussion, okay, we might need to have an extra escort. So they have different risk assessments. For a low risk, it would be two people. For medium risk, it might be three. Or for high risk, it could be three to four. So depending on the case. So in some cases, and in this particular case, if there was one of the arrestees, if they're in Clover Hill Prison awaiting to be deported, if they have reports from the Irish Prison Service that they're being violent in prison, or they're going to resist, they would probably have four on that person. But there were very few high risk. There might have been one in our flight in this deportation. The vast majority were low to medium.
Mm. And the Gardaí escorts, do they fly with them as well? On the
escorts do. There's the Garda. Teams are broken up into three sub-teams. So they have a ground team that does all the work here in terms of all the liaising with the different agencies, identifying where the people are and, if necessary, arresting them and bringing them essentially to the plane. Then they have an escort team, which is the largest of the teams because, it could be two, three to each person. So they go on the actual flight and they take charge of the flight. And then they have what they call a backup team. And the backup team are there for that purpose. They carry out, if people need to go to the toilet or to the bathroom, they conduct that process on the plane. It's extraordinary how managed and structured the whole flight process is and the preparations for that. So the backup team is there often to bring the deportees physically onto the plane, and then they're there to assist the escort team once they're on the plane.
Mm. And once they're on their plane, I assume it's too late to resist at that point, or does that ever happen?
No, in terms of they've had, I have in my piece, six charters this year. They said they've had only one case where they've had to restrain a person on a plane. There was an incident, and it's in our article, where unexpectedly one of the men who they hadn't expected any trouble from suddenly kicked off as he was being taken off, and seven Gardaí had to try and manage him outside the truck. And they have cleverly, probably maybe from experience, they have a very thick mattress which they have there in order to place the person on the ground and adjust themselves so they can carry him up an airplane staircase, which obviously is a bit of an ordeal if the person is resisting. And that whole process took about 15, 20 minutes to get him on the plane and to settle him in his seats and to kind of calm him down. And they have an interpreter on the plane and he was there to assist. As it turned out, it seemed to be over. He was kicking off because he didn't have access to his mobile phone. Which he did get once he's on the plane. They can access their mobile phone once they're on the plane. But it could have been a trigger for all the emotions of the whole process.
Yeah.
So, and I was told by the Human Rights Monitor, they have an independent Human Rights Monitor who works for the Department of Justice, who goes on these charters, and he said he hadn't seen that before. So it seems to be rare, that kind of incident.
Yeah. Prior to all that, when they have to deal with embassies, does it ever happen that if, say, they have someone who's come into this country, committed a crime, that the country they came from says, well, no, we don't want them back?
Yes. Yes.
Ah.
And in the cases before the courts, which we might go into too much detail, the country of origin of that person does not have an arrangement with the Irish state to take somebody back and won't take them. So we are in a situation where if the country of origin doesn't have an arrangement or refuses to take the person, the state's stuck in terms of what they can do. So that's definitely the case. The Garda National Immigration Bureau tell me that they have worked very hard in directly contacting embassies, most of them in London, trying to make arrangements to send people back. And they said, we're one of the few countries that has an arrangement with Algeria to send somebody back there on a commercial flight. But there are countries out there that won't accept them. Pakistan did take them because we had a charter plane to Pakistan and they did take them. But if the country doesn't want them, we are in a predicament then in the situation.
And are most of the deportations now on charter flights? Is there an arrangement where they can stick somebody on a regular flight?
Yeah, they do. I mean, a lot of them are on commercial flights and they may only have one or two escorts with the person and they say they've never had much of a problem with any of those. Some countries like Brazil, where we had a large consignment of people deported earlier this year, I can't remember the month, they were all commercial flights because the Brazilian system won't accept charter flights for whatever reason, but they accept commercial flights. So the Gardaí did that. But they are using charter flights now increasingly.
Yeah. God, that's a massive massive amount of resources.
It's colossal. It's huge. And they're very expensive. It's a very expensive process. I think the Department of Justice can get funding from the EU in some of the situations. But yeah, it's a very expensive process. It's hugely labour intensive. But that's the system that we have. And indeed, not just us, but other European countries as well.
And in your piece, I think, and you've said it yourself here, you know, the guards do stress they're trying engagement first in all instances and talking to people rather than they're dragging people out of their homes.
Yeah, well, that's what they stress. I mean, I have heard from some advocacy groups that they have heard of situations where people have been taken out of their beds. My understanding from the Gardaí is that that preceding that, everybody knows they are due to be deported. And that they contact them and let them know, you know, you are due to be deported. Even with the families, that's a more intensive process because obviously there's children involved. So the Gardaí say that they are in regular engagement with the families. They know what's happening. They know they're going to be deported. In some cases, they're brought up from, say, if they're down in Mayo or Kerry, they're brought up to a hotel in Dublin or in Wicklow overnight and then taken out and deported the following day. So the Gardaí would say that that all the people know they're going to be deported, that there's a lot of engagement beforehand, and it's not like ICE in the States where they're cornering people on the street and, you know, dragging them into cars. That's not the way they do it. I think some other European countries have a bit more forceful approach to it. And the GNIB, the Garda National Immigration Bureau, said that before this charter process started, they said they approached the Department of Justice and said, we'd like an independent human rights monitor to protect us and obviously to protect the people concerned. So that person is on the flights. They observe most of what goes on. They obviously observe all the process out in the airport, which is a lengthy process. So they observe what happens there. They talk to the families at different stages of that process as well, and they go on the flight.
Right. And I suppose it's one of those kind of internet things that the guards are going into schools.
No, they say they absolutely don't go into schools.
Yeah.
Now, what does happen if a lot of the families might be staying in IPAS centres? So if they have to collect them from an IPAS centre, that is going to be disruptive. It's going to be seen by other children who are staying in the IPAS centres, and then they go to school. And we had that case recently with the deportation to Nigeria, where other children who were staying in the IPAS centres saw the family being taken from the room and bags being packed and all the stress and distress of that. And they went into the school, and the school was very upset, and the principal spoke out as well. So that happens.
Yeah. That piece is in the Irish Examiner. Cormac O'Keefe is security correspondent. Cormac, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.